Good evening and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. So glad you could be with us this evening. A lot of great football talk on the program tonight. And we're going to introduce our special guests in just a moment. But first, we introduce the co-host of the program, senior sports writer from The Morning Call, and recently receiving an accommodation from the city of Allentown, Mr. Keith Edward Groler. Keith, congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was a very nice night, but I worry about, are they giving you awards? Maybe Coach Stem could speak to this. Do they give you awards when they want to shove you out the door? I'm not quite sure. They're like, okay, now we gave you a nice award. Maybe you ought to retire.
No,
I don't know.
No, but sure
it was a nice night. And, you know, Allentown going through tough times, and it was a contentious meeting. I think I brought a little joy. Rarely do I do that, but my presentation was a little bit of a joy and a very stern meeting at City Hall last night. But it was very nice of the city of Allentown to do that for me.
All right, and certainly well deserved too. Mentioned the guests. Let's introduce them right here off the top of the show. We have coaching legends, Mr. Bob Stem and Mr. Robert Shriver. Bob, thanks so much for coming in and sharing some time with us. You know, my first question was going to be, how are you enjoying retirement? But Coach Shriver has given a tip that you're actually back in the coaching profession. And when I called your house this morning, your wife said, yeah, Bob's at work today.
So yeah, what have you guys been up to?
Well, I work at Louise Moore Park. I've been there 5 years now. And it's a good job. It's just 6 hours.
What do you do, clean up the horse stuff?
No, there's no horses.
Wow. I gave you a compliment, Keith, and right away I'm taking shots at our guests.
I've been to Humor Park, and didn't they have horse rides at one time?
No, I don't know. It was before my time.
Maybe I'm thinking of another park, but that one on the south side of Easton. No?
Yeah, I don't know if it's south
side.
It's not south side Easton.
I thought it was on the other side of the river.
North side.
Okay. Mr. Shriver knows what I'm talking about.
It's actually in Palmer Township.
Okay. I got
Louise
you.
Moore.
Now, Coach Shriver, can we talk about what your new coaching profession is? After 25 years, you are back in the coaching saddle this fall.
My son-in-law played for me in 1989, 90, and 91 at Easton. Eventually married my daughter. I had two children with her, and he is now coaching the Lower Nazareth Township Youth League team. And he fairly well beat me down to get me to go out and blow a whistle and be with my grandson and be with him. And you can teach me something about coaching. Yeah, right. So I'm there blowing a whistle. You're right, Chris. And I'm having a great time with it. The little guys they make you feel young.
I was going to say, are you enjoying it? Because
absolutely,
that's the special time to spend time with the grandson. Bob, as you know, we were talking about your family before the show, too. So you're enjoying your quote-unquote retirement right now.
Yeah, I have four children and five grandchildren. So every Monday we have dinner since 9/11. We've been doing dinner every Monday, and we have all the children there, and they really enjoy it, I think. And we get to see the grandkids on Monday, and you know, talk to them and try to keep them straight.
You know, this is like, we talk about Christmas in July This is like Thanksgiving in August, because when I see these two guys, one game comes to mind. It's that great game on Thanksgiving morning.
I got about seven questions about that, but go ahead.
But I just wanted to say that it's great to see these guys. And we're getting going. I don't like this new schedule here where we're really... Really, we're beginning practice on August 7th. I mean, and we're playing two football games, guys, before Labor Day Monday. I'm trying to get used to it, but the summer's non-existent now. Do you guys, when the dog days of summer hit, do you, Coach Shriver, do you start thinking about, man, I wish I could be on that field?
I don't. I had my day, and it was good, and I don't want to go back to coach. I didn't. My son-in-law hit me.
Right.
But August 18th was always the day we started practice. That was the legit. New Jersey was a bit later.
Right.
But we were August 18th, and when it comes around, you can believe, Keith, that I think about it hard.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get to more great conversations about high school football issues from the past, and also get Bob and Bob's thoughts on some current high school football issues as well in just a few moments. Right now, we're happy to be joined by Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports and 247 Sports, who's been doing a great job covering the Eagles. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on Sports Talk this evening.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
We really appreciate it. And I know I want to ask you about a couple big stories you've had over the last few weeks involving the Eagles. Some breaking news today. They signed a former Pro Bowl corner, before people get too excited, Corey Graham. But it does provide some depth at the cornerback position, too. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that signing by the Eagles this afternoon.
Yeah, Chris, I know Graham played safety the last two seasons. But to me, I think he's here to be that veteran cornerback. I don't think they're ready to make Rasul Douglas the week one starter yet. They've given Patrick Robinson a shot. He's been terrible. C.J. Smith, does that really excite you? Probably not. I mean, at least with Graham, it's something. With Corey Graham, you have a guy with experience. He hasn't missed a game since 2007, made the Pro Bowl in 2011, albeit on special teams. But still, when he was with Jim Schwartz at cornerback in 2014, played both cornerback positions, had three interceptions, and played really well. In fact, he was the guy who was the more impressive player in that top five defense, not Lars McKelvin, who the Eagles brought in last year.
You know, I thought the Eagles did a great job this offseason with all the offseason moves, except for defensive back. I mean, they improved wide receivers. They added some depth on the offensive and defensive line. But corner was the one spot I really thought they had to get out and add at least one blue-chip person. They did draft one number two, but he's not going to be available at least for the first half of the year. How do you assess the cornerback position right now? And I believe a couple days ago you actually had a story online about one of the undrafted corners have been looking better than some of the other people that are projected to possibly make the roster. So what's the latest with the corners at the Eagles camp?
Well, I mean, to me, it's not good. Like I said, I think if I had to grade the cornerback situation right now, Jalen Mills has been solid, yet unspectacular, but at least he has experience. A little-known fact people know about Eagles cornerbacks, once they cut Dwayne Gratz last week, combined C.J. Smith, Mitchell White, and Aaron Grimes played a combined one defensive snap last year. That just won, and that was Grimes. P.J. Smith was on the 53-man toward the end of the season, but he just played special teams. These guys don't have any experience whatsoever. That's why I thought bringing in a veteran like Corey Graham was good for this defense. It's a lot better than Tay Glover Wright, who they brought in the other day. I thought that was just a death move, but Robinson's been getting beat. You know, one-on-ones, you can't look too much into it. That doesn't favor a cornerback, but when you're getting beat deep in 11-on-11, it's not good. You need other players, a veteran leader, if you will, to help this defense out. And right now, before Graham, they didn't have it. And at least now they do. They have something. I think Rasul Douglas is going to be the week one starter, but at least Graham can provide a bridge to that if they're not ready to give him that responsibility yet.
How do you think they're going to compensate from a strategic standpoint? Obviously, unless they make a trade, whoever gets cut probably isn't going to be that great of an upgrade anyway at this point before the season starts. So what kind of strategy do you think they'll employ? Do you think they'll blitz more to try to put more pressure on opposing teams' quarterbacks, or do you think they'll drop back in max protection and try to help out some of those younger guys deep downfield?
Well, that's something I wish Jim Schwartz would do more is blitz. He only tends to rush four guys. And those are the four guys that he's got on the field. I think that's why he really stressed the defensive line, adding a guy like Jimmy Jernigan, who's actually a better fit in the 4-3 than he is the 3-4. And he's been one of the most impressive players at camp. He can defend the run. He's very good at pass rushing the quarterback. Him and Isaac Seumalo have been in great battles throughout camp. And then you got Derek Barnett, who led the NCAA in pressures over the last 3 years, not the number one overall pick in Myles Garrett. So I thought Barnett is in a great situation with this team with Timmy Jernigan and All-Pro Brandon Graham and a former All-Pro and Fletcher Cox. I think those guys are really going to go after the quarterback. I think that's what Schwartz is banking on. Get to the quarterback, make him throw the football quick, and then that way the quarterbacks won't give up that big play. It'll actually benefit them as time goes on.
Jeff, just your take. I know we're only about a week and a half in a training camp here, but your assessment of Carson Wentz and some of the things that you're seeing that he's doing better, maybe even intangibles away from the huddle and away from the field, he's doing things differently than he did in his rookie season last year.
Yeah, and Wentz admitted that it's been sort of a whirlwind for him. I mean, last year at this time, we were talking about if Wentz would even play in 2016, let alone be the starting quarterback. An opening day. Remember, this time last year, we were talking about him being the number three quarterback, not even seeing a snap, and Doug Peterson didn't deny that. Now, when they traded Sam Bradford, Wentz only had 39 preseason snaps, and 8 days to prepare for the regular season. And I thought he did a pretty decent job of that. And a lot of people thought this team was going to be a 5-6-win team. They overachieved. They won 7 games last year. Now Wentz knows he's the leader of the offense. He's the leader of the Eagles. You see him going to Fargo with those wide receivers. They're running a Rookie's Got Talent night tonight. Actually, it's been all week where he's helping out the rookies. He's helping out a lot of these kids pretty much. And, you know, there was a story out the other day. I think it was on I forget. It was probably like NFL.com or something like that, that said Wentz is pushing the Eagles organization to be great. And that's something we've never seen out of an Eagles quarterback. He had an excellent interview with Howie Roseman asking, what are you going to do to improve the wide receiver position? And Roseman said he never had a quarterback ask him that. Well, Roseman went out. Look what he got. Alshon Jeffery, Torrey Smith, Mac Hollins, Sheldon Gibson. You know, Eagles wide receiving corps is as deep as it's ever been. And I think that's because of the leadership Carson Wentz has provided.
Yeah, speaking of the wide receivers, Jeff, you had a great article about a week ago about Josh Norman and following up some trash talking with Alshon Jeffery. Actually, he was trying to downplay a little bit. But, you know, normally I'm not into that, but I thought it was a little refreshing because last year the Eagles' wide receivers were so bad, I don't think opposing teams even bothered to trash talk. They knew that they were going to have the advantage, certainly, with their secondary. So talk a little bit about the improved wide receivers and about that rivalry and the back and forth that's going on between Alshon and Josh Norman with the Redskins.
Well, it's definitely a one-sided thing because Jeffrey's been quiet on the matter. I mean, mm-hmm. the only talk Jeffrey is doing is on his own quarterback saying he's going to make him an MVP. And, you know, Josh Norman, he's pretty much saying, I'm going to shut down Alshon Jeffery. He thinks he can get physical with me. Well, it turns out Alshon Jeffery has gotten better than Josh Norman over the last couple years. I think he had 5 catches for 92 yards and a touchdown. This was a couple years ago when Norman was on the Panthers and Jeffery was on the Bears, and Jeffery seems to have a little bit of advantage there, especially in the red zone. And, you know, with Josh Norman, the Redskins, as far as I know, they're still keeping them on one side of the field and letting Rashawn Greeland get beat. So that might not even be a matchup. The Eagles might just put Jeffery on that side and say, all right, Josh, come over here if you dare. And, you know, it's more of Norman trash talk in the long way compared to Jeffery. I mean, Jeffrey's more of developing his team and making them better. And Norman, I guess he's just living off that $15 million a year he's making and being, hey, I'm Josh Norman. I can get an Odell Beckham's head. Maybe I can get in this guy's head too.
Yep. We're talking with Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports, 24/7 Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at JeffKerr247. Speaking of Aguilar, he's been out for 3 days out of training camp. Donnell Pumphreys also has been out for 3 days. Your thoughts about Jeffery sitting out? I know there's some people that are saying he has to get out there. He has to develop the chemistry with Carson Wentz. But the Eagles are taking a precautionary approach and trying to go easy and slow with him. Is it a big deal if he doesn't get out there for very many snaps? And also about Pumphreys, I thought he could be a key this year. Darren Sproles is a little older. Maybe he breaks down. And that safety valve that Sproles has provided for Carson Wentz last year was so important. I thought Pumphreys might have had to kind of accelerate his learning curve and be more of a part of the Eagles' offense this year. So are either of those injuries a concern right now?
To me, Jeffery isn't a concern. In fact, offense coordinator Frank Reich said it today, what we were talking about. It's precautionary. Mm-hmm. You know, they really don't need him out there. He's got the chemistry with Wentz. He might not even play the first preseason game. You know, this shoulder strain isn't anything serious. This was week one. Alshon Jeffery would be out on the football field. But it's not week one. It's August 3rd. It's not September 3rd, which is key for them. You know, you want to protect your investment. This is the guy who's going to take your offense to the next level. Why get him hurt in a meaningless full contact practice? That's for the kids. That's for the rookies. Pumphrey is a little bit concerning. I know he's been durable, but mm-hmm. still, that hamstring injury, I mean, I had hamstring injury over the summer. They linger, and they linger a long time. I think they're just taking it easy with Pumphrey, too. We might not see him till later next week. And I think it's good they have 2 off days in 5 days. They have a 10-10-10 tomorrow. It'll be easier for them. We might see Pumphrey back on the practice field by Sunday, but right now it just seems like they're taking it easy on him as well.
Yeah. Jeff, before we let you go, I know back in April you tweeted out, Derek Barnett, Tim Jarnigan, Fletcher Cox, and Brandon Graham, what a scary defensive line that is. Has it lived up to the billing so far, and is it going to be the cornerstone and a big key for the Eagles' defense this year?
That's the one thing I'm really looking forward to, Chris. Seeing Derek Barnett, you know, 24/7 Sports is based out of Brentwood, Tennessee, which is by Nashville. They're Derek Barnett is from Nashville. I've heard a lot of good things about Barnett. 192 pressures over the past three seasons. That's eight more than Myles Garrett, who went number one overall. Barnett, 33 sacks, broke Reggie White's record. That's another impressive stat. He's in a perfect situation with Timmy Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham. Brandon Graham second in the NFL with 83 pressures last year. Yeah, he only had 5.5 sacks, but obviously pressures is a key stat. That's what got Brandon Graham an All-Pro award. And, you know, with 40 run stops as well, that's something that we don't look at in a defensive end. It's not a sexy stat, but it gets the job done. Mm-hmm. Fletcher Cox won't be double-teamed anymore because of Timmy Jernigan and the presence he brings. I think Jernigan was one of the more underrated moves of the offseason. This front four, they're going to do some damage this year. And, you know, I made a bold prediction last year. They were going to get 50 sacks. They were definitely on pace for that until they had 14 sacks in the final 10 games. I think that really hurt the pass defense as well, because in those final 10 games, the Eagles allowed 305 passing yards per game compared to 204. I think this defense, at least this front four, can definitely get 50 sacks this year with the talent that they assembled over the offseason.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for your time, and keep up the great work following the Eagles for CBS Sports and 247 Sports as well.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Chris.
All right, our pleasure. Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports, 247 Sports, and also, again, follow him at Twitter, at Jeff Kerr, 247. Bob Stemm, you actually coached Tom Coughlin, who
yes.
was the Giants coach for many years. And I'll try to set this up the way I did before the show. Talk about Tom's ability as a player at Syracuse when you had.
Well, he was a lot better football coach than he was a player. He wasn't bad. I mean, he did play with Larry Zonka.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Zonka was in that backfield. So, you know, and Tom Coughlin was a part of it. But Tom Coughlin wanted to be a great coach.
Yeah, not quite the football player, though. That
no, he wasn't as great a player, that's for sure. You know, he wasn't drafted. I don't know if he played much at Syracuse.
Yeah, you both had great careers, too, as players. I was curious how you think now when you watch games. Coach Shriver, I see you at football games quite a bit. The last fall, I saw you a couple times up at Nazareth. When you're watching, first of all, from a coaching perspective and also from a player's perspective, when you see modern-day athletes and modern-day coaches and what they have to go through and what they have to deal with, what are your reflections about how you played as opposed to nowadays with players and with coaches?
First off, they're fairly well bigger now than they were in my era. It's much more complicated now. There are more coaches on the field than what we ever had. And, of course, the big deal in football is throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. I have trouble relating to that. You know, I want two tight ends and a full backfield, and I want second and six. Mm-hmm. I don't care about, you know, Woody Hayes always said three things happen when you throw. Two of them are bad. Mm-hmm. And I sort of buy into that. And, of course, being in Easton with Coach Root and Coach Grube, that's the way I was taught, and that's the kind of kid we had at Easton. Just strap them up and pound forward. So seeing the size of the people and seeing the philosophies are probably the two biggest differences.
Mm-hmm. I said on last week's show, I get a little Grullers grumblings here that I do every week, and last week's Grullers grumblings was devoted to the fact that I believe football is under siege right now. Everybody's worrying about, and justifiably so, the concussion issue. But I'm also saying don't give up on this sport. I believe that this sport is perhaps the greatest teaching sport there is, because it talks about teamwork, overcoming adversity. You cannot be a successful football team without 11 guys on both sides of the ball pulling together. There's so many great virtues. I believe that right now would probably be the safest time to play with all the technology, with all the research that's been done, all the precautions that are going to be taken now that weren't taken maybe when you guys were players and even as coaches. And we got great medical people. Lehigh Valley is awash in great medical people, whether it's Lehigh Valley, St. Luke's, or Coordinated Health. What are your thoughts on that topic? I just think football is being somewhat... I don't want to say unfairly, because it's a serious concern. It really is a serious concern, but I feel like football is maybe getting a little bit of a bum rap right now.
Well, if it wasn't for football, I wouldn't be here. Let's put it that way. You know, when you think about it, I started at 10 years old in the midgets, and I went to grade school, mm-hmm. and then I went to high school, and then I went to college. I'm the only one that ever graduated out of nine children in my family mm-hmm. from high school. Mm-hmm. And it's because of football. Mm-hmm. I stayed out for the football team. I wanted to play, and then I got a scholarship to Syracuse. I played at Syracuse, and I became a school teacher, and I coached football. And, you know, I don't see any great change in it. I really don't. You know, I haven't been around it, obviously, in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. But I did like 20-some years of head coach, and I think I did 8 as an assistant. So, you know, it really hasn't, I don't think it has changed. I don't think people feel that, kids hit harder, there's no doubt about that. Yeah. I think, you know, they hit harder, they run faster, a little bit of everything.
But do you think the coaches have to be more aware now of certain things that maybe they had, certainly in the 50s and 60s, that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. They got to be aware of kids' injuries. They talk to them now, and they, as soon as somebody's hurt, they get, you know, they get them to the trainer, and they get them taken care of.
Mm-hmm. I've heard Rollers, you say...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I would like to hear your response.
Rollers, grumbles.
Yeah.
You're talking to a dinosaur. I would shrink the size of the shoulder pads, and I would take the bloody face masks and eye covers off of the helmets and get people to hit with their shoulders and move their head. Mm-hmm. You know you're going to get this thing smashed. You get it out of the way. But now with this entire encasement on the face, there's no fear. I would reduce the size of the shoulder pads, reduce the size of the face mask, and teach people to play with their shoulders and arms.
You said that with a little bit more animated before in the green room before the show. You were very passionate.
That is a great answer. I really like that.
Yeah. You guys get the blood flowing in us. So.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny you said about coaching, because I remember so many times when I'd come to your practice, Coach Stem, or after a game and talk with you, you'd always use that phrase about coaching experience and teaching experience. It's a life lesson. When you're talking about winning, losing, whatever adversity you went through, you're trying to teach the kids something. And I think that's something, I think today's coaches certainly try to do that, but I don't think maybe parents or fans realize that that's done as much as it is in football, and that you're actually trying to teach kids something about life or about dealing with winning, dealing with losing, whatever it is, you're trying to educate them.
Well, you know, my coach in high school, who was Harold Bellis, was a great high school coach. I mean, he was tremendous. He really was. I mean, he cared about you as a person. He made sure kids went to school, and they did their work in school. He was really on you all the time, and what a great guy he was.
Yeah. Bob, you were more of an athletic director when I got into this industry, too, but I think you'd kind of agree that there's a lot of coaching and there's a lot of teaching that goes on with coaches.
Early on in my head coaching career in the early 80s, I tried to adopt the personality and the persona of Coach Grubb and Coach Root. Mm-hmm. I was a miserable failure. Those guys were unique, and they could carry that. I finally came to an epiphany, and I said, coach your team like you teach your class. And I used my teaching philosophy on the football field, dialed it back, and taught.
All right, our special guests are Bob Shriver and Bob Stem. We're going to be talking about their memories from playing and coaching days and also get their thoughts on some current sports issues with Lehigh Valley football and the Lehigh Valley landscape. Right now, it is your chance to get in on our trivia game and win tonight's special prize. This question, Keith, if you're going to complain about the question, I had nothing to do with it. In fact, I've never even seen this film, so I don't know the answer myself right now. But this is tonight's question. At the end of the film Silver Linings Playbook, with somebody named Cooper, I think, was in it. At the end of this film, the winning bet depends on a dance contest and on the Eagles beating a certain NFL football team. What team was that? So at the end of Silver Linings Playbook, winning bet depends on a dance contest and the Eagles beating what NFL team? And here's more information on what and how you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now.
with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guests, Bob Stemm and Bob Shriver. Let's see, Bob Stemm, you want to talk about watching Coach Shriver as a player? What were your thoughts about him?
Well, yeah, I remember him as a player. I am 10 years old.
Bob Shriver's giving him a dirty look.
yeah, and I remember him as a player. He wasn't bad. He was decent. He really was. And you know, I watched them, and I used to have to look at the film of Easton, who they played during the season. Sometimes I look at 10 different games. Mm-hmm. And so I saw a lot of Bob Shriver in those early days of my career.
Yeah, he's still giving you a dirty look. Hey, Coach Shriver, you wanted to talk about Beyonce and about Silver Linings Playbook, which you have seen 10 times. So what's your review of that film?
They're both very good films, and they have wonderful people that are involved both in music and cinema. That's it.
No, you got to say what you said during the commercial break.
Mm-hmm.
No. All right.
Coach Shriver, you are so good and on the bank. I mean, you could actually do the banquet circuit. I attended the Easton.
Yeah.
You ought to come to that.
Yeah.
The Easton, whether it's the Wall of Fame.
The Wall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. It's a marathon. The two I attended were four-hour marathons. But he kept it going. Him and
Dick Hammer.
Dick Hammer, the great voice of WEST for so many years. And I miss WEST dearly. I still think that they should find a way to get him at least on Thanksgiving morning on either TV or radio. I think don't understand it. But anyway, your personality. People may misunderstand you a little bit. When you coached, you were like, oh, my goodness. I would, again, just like I said about Jim Walker last week from Raven, I kind of rooted for Easton to win because I didn't want to talk. When I covered Easton, I was kind of pulling for Easton to win only because if you were coaching that team, it was going to be a very challenging and difficult interview because I know you took every loss to heart. You were able to get beyond that. You were very good person.
Interview him after his first loss this fall at the youth league.
And you're not the first one. I remember Dick Schmidt at Deerup High School, same way. He wouldn't talk to anybody in the cafeteria during a game day. And, of course, basketball, you're talking, they would play 28 ball games, much different than football. But talk about that personality that you kind of take on when you're a coach.
It's difficult to put it into a few words. I learned that you had to be you, and you couldn't adopt another personality and try and carry that to a successful conclusion. And I learned that my forte was fairly well as a teacher and a listener, not as a proponent of watch me and I know more than you and that kind of thing. And I was also very much in tune with what the press wanted and how the press would phrase a question and make sure that they got the answer pretty close to what they want. So I listened to you people mm-hmm. extremely hard and tried to be informational but not provocative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you did it very well, by the way. Now, Coach Stemm, I remember coming over, just a little bit different personality. There were times when I covered his football team in the Mark Borda, Adam Bednarik era. Some great, great players. Eddie Scipio was over there at that time. And you were playing like a national schedule. I mean, because of the EPC thing, you were kind of playing people from Ohio. But we'd come over into practice, and I would say, like, practice would be beginning, and he's still talking to me. I'm thinking most coaches say, get the heck off the field, Gruller. We got to go. He would talk to me for like 15, 20 minutes. He says, let them guys run the show. I'll get there. And that was his. But when I'm going to tell you something, when it came time to get down to business, and on game nights, There was really no one better than Bob Stemm. And you had that ability to say, "Hey, okay, I'm gonna schmooze with the press. We're gonna have some fun here." But when it got down to brass tacks, you took care of business.
Yeah, and you know what? I had some good assistant coaches. You know, Dan Kendra and Steve Sampson coached with me a lot of years at Phillipsburg, then at Bethlehem Catholic. In fact, I had enough confidence in him to give him the defense. Mm-hmm. Steve was a great coach. He really was. And then I just ran the offense. But in the beginning, the first 9 years of my career, I did both offense and defense. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to Bethlehem Catholic, I finally gave the defense over to Steve Sampson and just ran the offense. But it was fun.
You tried to have, I mean, look, there were some tough moments, you know, because Bethlehem Catholic, I thought, was always in the crosshairs of people. Okay?
Right.
But you tried to get some fun out of it, too.
Yeah, we did. I thought we did have fun, you know, and the kids had fun, and we as coaches did. You know, so you couldn't help it. There were a few people on that staff were a little light upstairs. come practice. I mean, yeah, they were good. They were really good people. But, you know, you're talking about assistant coaches. You know, at Bethlehem Catholic, I had 17.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I did. I had 17 people helping. You know, they all wanted to help.
And they probably all wanted to contribute in some way.
Yeah, they did. So, you know, and I let people do it at practice. When it came game time, then I took over.
Here's a dangerous question I'm going to ask. How do you like dealing with the media? Because there's very few places in the country that has the coverage we have. The morning calls all over the place, especially now on the internet. We go to a lot of practices and we do stuff on the internet in addition to being on RCN TV. And I know Keith is doing a lot more. I'm doing a lot more. There's a lot more coverage in general of high school sports, and maybe more than anywhere else in the country. Is that fun? Is it a hassle? Or are we kind of a pain sometimes? What's it like dealing with all this media coverage?
In my era, I dealt with Teddy Mikesell for the most part at the Morning Call. I dealt with Gene Beckner at the Eastern Express, and I dealt with Dick Hammer on WSD. You couldn't come across three better gentlemen than that. Mm-hmm. All they were concerned about was getting information and informing the people that cared about Eastern High what was going on in the inside. I never had an issue with a reporter either on the printed media or the electronic media ever.
Well, it was, you know, I want to say that was the nice thing. We had an Eastern guy. Ted Mikesell was that Eastern guy. And there was a bunch of different people now, but Mike Blouse, your friend, I mean, for many years he was the Eastern Red Rovers football reporter. It's nice to get those relationships when you cover one team. Now, unfortunately, the way staffs are right now, I'm responsible for at least 12 teams right now, where I got to keep tabs on what's going on at 12 different teams. And then there's another reporter we got that has to keep tabs on 12 teams. So you can't get that closeness that we once had when John J. Fox was your Bethlehem guy. Right. He covered every game at Bethlehem Area School District Stadium. Ted Mikesell was the Eastern guy. We had I was more like an Allentown guy and so forth, but now it's like, you know, you can't get that report. Sometimes that's a missing thing because you build that trust. You knew you could say something to Ted Mikesell, and you knew darn well you didn't have to tell him it's off the record, Ted.
If it was ugly,
you knew that.
He wouldn't put it in.
But now when you don't, you see these guys, and we got two, you know, as you said, I think people ought to appreciate the fact that there's two cable companies around here that do a great job. RCN the best, right? And we got everybody. We got, you know, a lot of people have ramped up their coverage and doing a great job. But I think the media, we know high school sports in the Lehigh Valley is so important. Yep. And if we get the cooperation from guys like these guys, well, then it makes our job that much easier. Yep.
All right, our special guest in studio, Coach Bob Shriver, Bob Stemm. We're going to continue the conversation and talk more about their memories and about some current high school football issues. Right now, it is Keith's favorite part of the show. It's called Growler's Grumblings, where he sounds off and talks about anything on his sports mind. Keith?
Well, I'm going to get a lot of people against me on this, but, you know, everybody knows I'm a St. Louis Cardinal fan. So when I say that I didn't like Pete Rose and I never thought he belonged in the Hall of Fame, people would say, oh, you're just a disgruntled Cardinal fan who couldn't beat the Big Red Machine in the 70s. Look, He violated the number one rule of baseball. The number one rule. It's not just a joke. It's not like a parking fine or a speeding ticket. When you are betting on baseball, it is the cardinal rule of that sport going back to the Black Sox scandal, okay? So I felt on that alone, he shouldn't go in the Hall of Fame. And I know, look it, fantastic player, greatest hitter, runs the first base on a walk, slides head first, I know. But now we find out more things about this guy, and I'm just saying, you know, bad guys are bad guys. And I know O.J. Simpson, a fantastic running back, I admired him as a kid, did some bad things. Bill Cosby, one of my favorite comedians, did some bad things, allegedly. They're people. And you got to evaluate the whole picture. Don't get caught up in the fact that Pete Rose had 4,000 some hits or whatever. Yeah, on that alone, yeah, he should go in the Hall of Fame. But look at the whole picture with Pete Rose and what things are coming out. A creep is a creep is a creep. I don't care if he can hit a baseball rolling out of bed on Christmas morning. I don't care about that. You evaluate the whole person. Pete Rose does not belong in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. And I know I'm going to offend a lot of people. And I know he helped the Phillies win a World Series, and that meant a lot to the Phillies fans. I do not like, you know, I just don't think Pete Rose is Hall of Fame timber now more than ever.
All right. Speaking of the Phillies, it's time for our timeout feature of the evening. And the Phillies' Andrew Knapp has been getting more playing time of late, and he's responded quite well both at the plate and behind the plate as well. We had a chance to catch up with Knapp and manager Pete McCannon to talk about the young catcher's recent performance at the big league level.
Obviously, playing every day, you get into the flow of the game a little bit easier, but I've been able to catch a lot of bullpens on the side and get in the cage with Stairsy a little bit to make sure that I'm ready when I do get my opportunities. And then as of late, I've been catching a little bit more, so it's been helping out a little bit offensively for sure.
Knapp is doing a good job behind the plate. He has his little quirks like everybody does, but he's been solid as far as I'm concerned defensively, and he's contributing with the bat as well. So I just want to see more and more of him.
Just continue to learn and gain experience. You know, there's nothing like playing in the big leagues and, you know, facing big leaguers each and every day. Just continuing to learn and keep winning ball games. Getting a lot of experience and facing a ton of big league pitching and trying to learn as much as I can. It's been nice being able to catch these guys in the minor leagues a little bit and then come up here and do it with Mark and Ben and those guys. So it's been fun so far, and hopefully we can win some more games in the second half.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Keith Broller, Bob Shriver, and Bob Stem. Don't forget, we still have that trivia question out there. At the end of the film, Silver Linings Playbook. You don't want to comment on it, Coach Shriver? No? All right. At the end of that movie, the winner of a bet depends on a dance contest and the Eagles beating a certain NFL football team. We ask you to correctly identify what football team that is. It's a good movie, though.
Oh, it's excellent.
And you saw it 10 times.
Yes, Jennifer Lawrence is fabulous.
We're getting warmer.
That's why he saw it 10 times, right. Jennifer Lawrence.
All right. Keith, are you going to get him off the hook this time? Because last time you cut me off, I was going after.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, go right at
him. Oh, no.
Go get him.
I want to ask you about Easton Peaberg, and Keith talked about this great rivalry. You know, it was funny because for the first couple years, I would ask Coach Shiffert, I don't get it. How could you do two games in 3 days and it means so much? And he was just, Chris, you don't understand. You got to come. You got to experience. And one time I had the opportunity to go. I think it was on a Monday or a Tuesday. But it was like game day in the entire city. The school, everyone got together. It was an amazing feeling. It was like everyone was on the same page. And as we talked about before the show, Peaberg and Easton people don't hate each other. It's a great rivalry, but you get along. And there's certain rivalries in which there's animosity, and there's other rivalries where it's amicable. But could you put into words why, in your mind, why Easton Peaberg is so special?
Go, Bobby.
Well, people from Phillipsburg moved to Easton, and there's Easton people moved to Phillipsburg.
Yeah.
You know, they come right across the bridge, and so, you know, it's just something that's, people like each other. They really do. Mm-hmm. In fact, I married an Easton girl who went to Easton High School when I played in high school. So, you know, it's a neat situation, I think, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of fun.
It's history. It's been over 100 years. It's played on a venue that is uncommon to most high school athletes and fans. And Bobby said it right. When I coached the McDonald's All-Star game, you'd watch the Easton and Phillipsburg were on the same team. They would dress on different sides of the locker room. They would not communicate on the field. They would walk off looking over their shoulders. And I'd get them in the end zone on like Tuesday night after practice. And I said, look, we're the same people divided by a river. Just like Coach Stem says, we have exactly the same people. We have exactly the same makeup and the same kind of competitive spirit. We have our 2 hours on Thanksgiving Day morning where we don't like one another. But you know what? If ever I had to go to war and I was in a foxhole, I'd want guys from Easton and Peaburg next to me. Mm-hmm. And I said, get over it and become friends. And that pretty much sums up my feeling about the tradition, the history, the rivalry, and the communities.
Well, thank God that rivalry continues, and I hope it never ends. So many things have changed, however. I wanted to get your thoughts, both you guys, on all the changes, the 6 classifications, the fact that we're starting basically practice next week. Coach Shriver talked about August 18th. Now it's August 7th. All the changes that are going on right now, I'm not so sure they're good. Okay.
Well, you know, I know when I was coaching at Phillipsburg, you didn't start till September the 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was great. You know, you look forward to September the 1st, and you started. We only got 3 double sessions in, and then you start school. That was always a nice thing about starting then.
Yeah.
You know, now, you know, you're going to put in 12, 13 double sessions in Phillipsburg, and Easton probably more, right?
I think there's some kind of a limit now.
Is there a limit?
Yeah, I believe.
But, you know, it's crazy. It really is. I think football was a lot more fun when I played. I really do. I think now people are too serious. The students are serious about it. They really are.
How about your two? Let me just go back to the Easton Peaburg thing. I thought Easton was the best sports town in the Lehigh Valley. And maybe that's because Bethlehem's got multiple schools. Allentown's got multiple schools. And Allentown's kind of like, you know, a little bit of East. Emmaus is there and Parkland. I mean, but Easton was Easton. Peaburg was Peaburg. I remember my first game ever, 1979. I got the signs of low guy in a totem pole. I got sent to cover you against Allen. Not Rich. Dick Snizak was the coach of the Canaries.
Right.
And you coached the State Liners. And I was like, it was like big time. It was like, you know, and I grew up going to these games, but to be as a reporter at Maloney Field on a Friday night was special. Every time. And I've got to go to Maloney because we kind of don't cover Peaburg anymore. But every time I go to Cottingham, it's like, this is like the Mecca. This is like, you know, the Boston Garden, the Madison Square Garden of football facilities. We still got that special. I don't know what it is about those two towns, but would you agree that your two towns are very, very special and unique?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about the fact that it's unique in the sense that people hate each other for just that hour or 2 hours that the game goes on. Mm-hmm. And then they're friends. In fact, like I said, I married a girl from Easton, and I'm sure there's a lot of guys who married girls from Easton and girls who married guys from Easton and vice versa. You know, it's just one of those things. And I've lived in Easton people don't know this, but for the last 40-some years, I've lived in actually Palmer Township.
Yeah.
Right, which is part of Easton. Mm-hmm. If you live there, you go to Easton High School.
I want to ask this question, too, and I know you were good friends with Coach Shriver, who was no longer the coach at Easton, too. He accomplished so much, and I think nowadays, for whatever reasons, coaches are let go or whatever. Sometimes you don't agree with it. Other times the way it's handled can be mishandled. Bob, did you want to start? We can go around the round table, too, here.
Stevie Shiffert and I started coaching together in 1976. We were both assistants under Coach Grube. When I got the head job, I made sure that Steven stayed, coached the line, and then I became athletic director and he became head coach. So our careers have been intertwined for 40 years. Steven is a top-notch teacher and a great football coach. And personally, and I have no idea what happened on the inside, I feel that after all that he has done for the Eastern Area School District, he should have been left to leave on his own when he wanted to a fanfare. Mm-hmm. So that disappoints me.
Yeah, I feel he's a great coach. I really do. And, you know, he's been there for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And he's won. Yeah. I mean, he's got probably, I don't know the amount of wins he has.
He's over 200.
Over 200 wins. That's great. Yeah, he has the most wins in Eastern history. Yeah.
Last year might have been his best job because he had so many injuries. He was playing freshman, and he still won.
Right.
What bothers me is, now winning is no longer enough in certain situations, and it seems to me it was how he won. And you talked about Eastern style football. Let's go, pound it! And I, as a reporter who was always worried about deadline, give me a lot of rushing football. I love that. I used to like Joe Gerenzer teams because we'd be out of there quickly. You know, it wasn't 50 passes a game, but it's now we have to worry about throwing the football around, playing an entertaining brand. Oh, and we got to build stats for kids. That's what troubled me about Steve Shiffert's departure. It was a lot of pressure put on him. Winning, and he won games. He won games, in my opinion, the right way, with integrity, with in class. But we have to worry about throwing the football.
Flair.
A different style. Flair, flash. Because why? Because, oh, we have to build stats so kids get extra. Look, if you play on a good football team like Easton, and time will prove that. The history of Eastern football, all the guys that have gone on to college, look, the recruiters will come. You don't have to throw the ball. You don't have to have 3,000 yards passing, you know, 1,200 yards receiving. Just play the game the way it's supposed to be, and the college people will come. And it just bothers me that he was canned, in my opinion, for the wrong. He won the right way, but it wasn't pleasing enough to a certain population, a certain greedy type of fan base that just cares about stats.
And ironically, you look at the numbers, he passed more than he ever did before the last few years, too. So that even that argument was a bit questionable. All right, our final segment with coaching legends Bob Stemm and Bob Shriver right after this time. Final segment of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. Again, that reminder, trivia question still out there. You can email the correct answer to us, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. You could include your name and town. And again, email rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. One final time, the question. At the end of the film Silver Linings Playbook with Jennifer Lawrence, the winning bet depends on a dance contest and the Eagles beating which NFL football team? Email the answer to us, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. All right, Coach Shriver would like to rant for the next 30 seconds about a certain issue. Go ahead. Time's yours.
Troubles me the way offensive line blocking has been changed in the last probably even longer than that. I can't stand offensive line blocking like this. When we played, this was the weapon. You blocked with your forearm. I could block Bobby Stemm if I could use a forearm. I could give him a battle. But if I had to block him like this, he'd push me right back. There's no room for the little guy with this being the way that they deal with things. Yeah. That's why you're seeing the behemoth linemen, because they can stand, they can squat, spread their feet, and beat people with their hands. I loved this. I couldn't have played today without it. That's it.
And Coach Stemm, you don't want to rant about anything?
No, I'm fine. But the thing of it is, you know, I coached both eras. Mm-hmm. I coached with the forearm, and then later we went to the blocking with the forearm, with the palms out and up in the chest. And when I was with New England for a short time, that's what I was taught there. Mm-hmm. That's the first time I ran into it, where you use your hands. And they had big guys on offense, big guys on defense. That's the way it was.
All right, time for our Stone Cold Lock prediction, which our panelists guarantee something in the world of sports comes true, can be local, regional, or national. And I have to call out Bob Shriver here first, because the last time you were on our show, your stone cold lock was that Easton and Wilson was going to merge and become one school district, and I got hate mail. And it wasn't, I guess you're so nice of a guy, no one wanted to complain to you. They complained to me that I asked a question which set you up to answer that. So your stone cold lock prediction, and I have no knowledge or foresight of what you're going to say now. What do you guarantee is going to come true?
As a lifetime fan of all professional athletic teams in Philadelphia, I would suggest with a great deal of distaste that no Philadelphia team will make the playoffs in anything in the next calendar year.
And you're a fan of all four?
Absolutely.
Wow, okay. Coach Tim?
You know, I guess my prediction is Phillipsburg's going to go undefeated, which they haven't done in a long time. And undefeated means they got to beat Easton at the end of the year, which, you know, Easton probably has twice the number of students. But it's still not going to happen where Easton's going to win.
Wow.
Phillipsburg's going to win.
Okay. Give me another dirty look here.
Yeah, he did. Come on, Bobby.
Keith?
Well, I would say that this is an easy one. Easton Phillipsburg will be the most attended game all season long, Thanksgiving morning. It happens every year. It's happened for the last, I don't know, 50 years that they've been number one in attendance. I do hope people get out to the games, though. Enjoy the coverage here in RCN, but get out to the games. I encourage you to do that. You know, nothing like a full house at Cottingham Stadium, Bethel Mary School District Stadium, all these stadiums, and including where I might be this year, the Colonial League venues. I'm looking forward to seeing some other places that I haven't been for a while. My prediction: the Eagles are going to win their first preseason game, and half the fan base will have them in the Super Bowl.
All right. My thanks to Coach Shriver and Coach Stem, and also Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports, who joined us in the first segment. We're going to be off next week. We'll be back in 2 weeks as we start our high school football coverage here on Sports Talk. For Keith, I'm Chris. Good night, everyone.